Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening and welcome.
Welcome. Welcome to the Bard's Grove.
How are you tonight, Kat?
I'm doing well, Lantern. How are you?
Oh, I'm doing just fine. I'm looking forward to the cool winds of autumn.
Yes, yes. By next week, we will be in fall. The light's already changing. It's amazing.
Yep, yep. You know, it's funny. My wife was just visiting Canada. And while I know there are still people who refuse to face global warming, it was in the mid to upper 90s in Canada last week.
Wow.
She asked the hotelier, "Where I found the heater, I can't find the air conditioner." And they went, "Air conditioner, open the door."
Yes, I don't know what people think they're going to do when, you know, when the real trouble starts, as if it hasn't already. But, you know, we can only do what we can. So do you have some stories for us tonight?
I do. I do. I have some interesting stories. This first one is an ancient fable from Iceland. It's called The Black School. Once upon a time, there existed somewhere in the world, nobody knows exactly where, a school which was called the Black School. There, the pupils learned witchcraft and all sorts of ancient arts. Whenever this school was, wherever it was somewhere deep below the ground and was held in a strong room. As it had no windows, it was eternally dark and changeless. There was no teacher either, but everything was learnt from books with fiery letters, which could be read quite easily in the dark. Never were the pupils allowed to go out into the open air or see the daylight during the whole time they stayed there, which was from 5 to 7 years. By then they had gained a thorough and perfect knowledge of the sciences to be learned. A shaggy gray hand came through the walls every day with the meals for the pupils. And when they had finished eating and drinking, reappeared to take back the horns and the platters. But one of the rules of the school was that the owner should keep for himself that one of the students who should leave the school the last every year. So the last student would be kept, snatched, never to appear again. And considering it was pretty well known among the pupils that the devil himself was the master, you may fancy what a scramble there was at each year's end. Everybody doing his best to avoid being the last one to leave the school. It happened once that 3 Icelanders went to this school by the name of Semundar the Learned, Kalfur Arneson, and Hafeldam Eldjonsson. And they all arrived at the same time, and they were all supposed to leave at the same time. Semundar declared himself willing to be the last of them, at which the others were much lightened in mind. So he threw over himself a large mantle, leaving the sleeves loose and the fastenings free. A staircase led from the school to the upper world, and when Semundar was about to mount this, the devil grasped at him and said, "You are mine!" But Semundar slipped out of the mantle and made off with all speed, leaving the devil the empty cloak. However, just as he left the school, the heavy iron door slammed suddenly to and wounded Semundar on the heels. And he said, "That was pretty close upon my heels," which words have since passed into a proverb. Semundar contrived to escape from the Black School with his companions scot-free. Some people relate that when Semundar came to the doorway, the sun shone upon him and threw his shadow upon the opposite wall. And as the devil stretched out his hand to grapple with him, Semundar said, "I'm not the last. Don't you see who follows me?" So the devil sees the shadow, mistaking it for a man, and Semundar escaped with a blow on his heels from the iron door. But from that hour, he was always shadowless, for whatever the devil took, he never gave back. The Black School.
Wow, what a great story. Getting us ready for Halloween, I see.
I guess so.
Okay, well, you know, I was thinking, and one of the things besides just loving September is that it's Merlin's month. As a matter of fact, I was told when I was at the Jung Institute and having my youngest son that that September 4th, which is Jonathan's birthday, is Merlin's birthday.
Wow.
So anyway, so whenever I think of September, it is Mercury. It is the month for Mercury. It's a month to travel. And so I thought, okay, well, Merlin, he's a hermit. Merlin is so many things, but many of his attributes really go with Virgo. And since we're in the last week of Virgo, I thought that we might like a few stories about Merlin. Now, this one is an extract from the Mort d'Arthur, the Death of Arthur by Thomas Malory. And it's one of the first ways we're introduced to Merlin. And this is more... Merlin as a magician, and Virgo is also very much about ritual magic. So this is a little bit of the beginning of the Mort d'Arthur.
Wonderful.
It befell in the days of Uther Pendragon, when he was king of all Britain and so reigned, that there was a mighty duke in Cornwall that had war against him for a long time. The duke was called the Duke of Tintagel, and so by means King Uther sent for him, the duke, charging him to bring his wife with him, for she was called a fair lady and passing wise, and her name was Igraine. So when the duke and his wife came to the king by the means of great lords, they were accorded both. The king liked and loved this lady well, and he made them great cheer out of measure, and desired to lay with her. But she was a good woman and would not assent to the king. And when she told the duke, her husband, and said, I suppose that we were sent for that I should be dishonored. Wherefore, husband, I counsel you that we depart from here suddenly, that we should ride all night to our own castle. And in likewise, as she said, so they departed, that neither the king nor none of his council were aware of their departing. All too soon the king knew of their departing, and he was wonderfully wroth. Then he called to him his privy council and told them of the sudden departing of the duke and his wife. Then they advised the king to send for the duke and his wife by a great charge, and if he did not come to his summons, then you can do what you want. You can take him to war. So that was done, and the messengers had their answers, and that was this, that neither the duke nor his wife would ever come back to the king. Then the king was greatly angered, and he sent the duke plain word again and said him to be ready and to arm himself, for within 40 days he would fetch him out of the biggest castle that the duke had. When the duke had this warning, he went and furnished and garnished two strong castles of his, one of which was called Tintagel, and the other castle was called Terrabil. So his wife, Dame Igraine, he put in the castle of Tintagel. And he himself went to the castle of Terrabil, the which had many issues and posterns there. And then in all haste came Uther with a great host, and he laid siege to the castle that the duke was in. And there he had many pavilions, and there was a great war, and many people died. Then for pure anger and for great love of fair Igraine, King Uther felt sick. So came to the king Sir Ulfis, a noble knight, and asked the king why he was sick. I will tell you, said the king, I am sick for anger and for love of the fair Igraine, that I may not, and I will never be whole. Well, my lord, said Sir Ulfis, I will go seek Merlin, and he will give you a remedy that your heart will be pleased. And so Ulfis departed, and by adventure he met Merlin in a beggar's array. And there Merlin asked Ulfis whom he sought. And he said he had little ado to tell him. Well, said Merlin, I know who you seek. for you seek Merlin. Therefore seek no further, for I am he. And if King Uther will well reward me, and will swear that he will fulfill my desire, then shall his honor and profit more be more than mine, for I'll cause him to have all his desire. All this I will undertake, said Ulfus, that there will be nothing unreasonable but in what you desire. Well, said Merlin, he shall have his intent and desire, and therefore, said Merlin, ride on your way, for I will not be long behind. Then Ulfus was glad, and he rode at a strong pace until he came to King Uther Pendragon, and told him that he had met with Merlin. Well, where is he? Said the king. Sir, he will not dwell long. Therefore, Ulfus was aware that Merlin suddenly stood at the porch, and Merlin came into the king. And when Uther saw him, he said, Sir, you are welcome. And Merlin said, Sire, I know all your heart. You will be sworn unto me, if you be a true king, to fulfill my desire, if you want your desire met. And so the king swore before upon the four evangelists. And Merlin said, Sir, this is my desire. The first night you shall lie with Igraine, you will get her with child. And when it is born, you must give it to me to nourish, for it will be to your worship, and the child's avail. For the child will be great and mighty. And the king said, I will do what you want. Now make ready, said Merlin, for this night you shall lie with Igraine in the castle of Tintagel, and you shall be like the duke her husband. Ulfus will be like the duke's right-hand man, Sir Bratius, a knight, and I will be like the knight, Sir Jordan. But wait, you may not ask any questions of her and her man, but say you are diseased, and take you to bed, and rise not in the morning until I come to you, for the castle of Tintagel is but 10 miles from here. And so this is done as they devised. But the Duke of Tintagel espied how the king rode from the siege, and therefore that night he issued out of his castle at a postern to fight the king's host. And so when he went out, though, he was slain before the king ever got to the castle of Tintagel. So after the death of the duke, Uther Pendragon lay with Igraine more than 3 hours and begat on her that night Arthur. And on the day, Merlin came to the king and bade him make ready. And so he kissed the lady Igraine and departed in all haste. But when the lady heard tell that the duke, her husband, had been killed that night, she didn't know what to do. She marveled, who was it that lay with her in the likeness of her lord? And so she mourned in private and held her peace. Then all the barons, by one assent, prayed the king to make peace between Lady Igraine and him. And so the king gave them leave, and he married her. Well, now that we know that you have a wife, let us all be joyful, said Sir Ulfus. And so the king and Lady Igraine were married. And after that, when the queen was ready to give birth, before she, of course, had her baby, at the winter solstice. And so that night, that very night, Merlin came and said, Sir, you must give me the child. You promised. And the king said, as you will. Well, said Merlin, I know a lord in your land who is a good man and a faithful man, and he will foster your child, and his name is Sir Hector, and he is a lord of fair livelihood with much land in parts of England and Wales. And this lord, Sir Hector, send for him, great king, and speak and let him know that you want to give him your child. And so when the baby was born, the king commanded 2 knights and 2 ladies to take the child, bound in a cloth of gold, and deliver him to the poor man that was at the postern gate. And so the child was delivered to Merlin, and he took the child to Sir Hector. And he had a holy man christen the child and name him Arthur. And so Sir Hector's wife nourished Arthur with her own milk, and there he grew. And that's just a little bit of the story of Merlin and his magics. In this story, you don't really get it, but it's very interesting if you've read the story of Merlin by Mary Stewart, The Crystal Cave. You find out that Merlin disguised the king and himself through his magic. And so Egwene was tricked into thinking it was her husband. And for a long time, Uther Pendragon was worried about Arthur. And so in getting rid of him and giving him to Merlin, he not only gave Arthur a wonderful, great teacher, but he also put him out of the way so he didn't have to think about him. And he always hoped afterwards that he would have another son, but Egwene never had another child.
That was a wonderful story.
Yes, it's one of the better ones.
I had an interesting experience with that Crystal Cave book. I was gifted that book by a dear, dear friend as I was departing for a journey. And it was to be a major journey in my incarnation here. And there was much that was demanded of me at that time. And I thought that since I knew my trials would be great and the demands on me would be much, I thought to my friend, as much as I appreciate this gift, I need to travel very light. And I thanked her, but I did not accept the book. But it was very funny. When I got to where my journey was going to begin, and I walked through a doorway, the first thing that I saw was a bookshelf. And on that bookshelf, prominently sitting on the top, was the Crystal Cave.
I hope you read it.
Oh, I picked it up. As they say, fool me once.
Right. Well, you know, that's one of the best modern fantasies about Merlin that's been written. So anyone out there listening, if you haven't read Mary Stewart's Crystal Cave series, there's four books. Run right out to the bookstore if there's any left in your neighborhood, or get one on Amazon, but it's certainly worth the read.
Well, I've got a story about a wizard, too.
Great.
This is a wizard from ancient Czechoslovakia and Bohemia, and the story is simply called The Wizard. There was once in our village a certain Avstriat, who was such a wizard that he could cause rain or hail to pass away when he chose. It happened that we were cutting corn in the country, and a cloud came up. We began to hurry off the sheaves, but he took no notice. He cut away by himself, smoked his pipe, did not rush, and when we asked him, he said, "Don't be frightened, there'll be no rain." And lo, behold, there was no rain. Once, all this I saw with my own eye, we were cutting rye, and the sky became black, and the wind rose, and it began to whistle at first far off, and then over our very heads there was thunder, lightning in a whirlwind, such a tempest that, "Oh God, thy will be done." We went after our sheaves, but he said, "Don't be frightened. There'll be no rain. Where won't it be?" We didn't hearken to him. But he went about his work, smoked his pipe, and cut away quietly to himself. Up came a man on a black horse, all in black himself. He rode straight up to Avistrea. "Hey, give permission." Avistrea said, "No, I won't." "Give permission," the black rider said. "Be merciful." "I won't. It would be impossible to get such a quantity in." The black horseman bowed to the man and hastened off back over the country hill. Then the black cloud became gray and then whitened. Our elders feared that there would be hail. Vadavastriyat took no notice. He cut the corn at his own pace, smoked his pipe. But again, a horseman came up. He hastened over the country still quicker than the first, but this one was all in white and on a white horse. "Give permission," he shouted at Vadavastriyat. "I won't." "Give permission, for God's sakes." "I won't. It wouldn't be possible to get such a quantity in." "Hey, give permission. I can't hold out." Then, and not till then, did Vadavastriyat relent. "Well then, go now, but only into the glen, which is beyond the plains." Scarcely had he spoke, when the horseman disappeared, the hail poured down as out of a basket. And in the course of a short hour, it filled the glen brimful, level with the banks. Vadavastriyat, the wizard.
Wizards are interesting. You know, we have Gandalf. We have the Wizarding School of Harry Potter.
Sure.
You know? So, you know, there's, and then many, many wonderful stories, modern fantasies and other stories about great wizards. And, you know, and I have to go back and say Merlin was one of the first that we've really known about. So I'm going to read something else about Merlin. First of all, Merlin is such an interesting character because in his myth, his mother was a princess. And she didn't want to tell who her father was. And so she said it was the spirit of the air, and perhaps it was. And they lived in the time of Vortinger, when the British king who first called in the Saxons and gave them land, and that was really the beginning of so much of the trouble in Britain with the Saxons.
Yeah.
And one of the things that happened was Vortinger was trying to build this tower and it kept falling down, and so he called his druids to him and they said, "Well, you need to mix the blood of a boy with no father." And so they looked all around the land for one, and of course they ran into Merlin, but he tricked them. And he went down under the tower and he saw a vision of two dragons fighting, a red one and a black one, and a white one, excuse me. And he prophesied that that the British would win out over the Saxons. And that's the first time we hear about him. And so there's this really interesting thing that goes on with Merlin's stories. He's sometimes a young child. Sometimes he's a beggar on the road. There's a story about him as a one-eyed sort of monster, monstrous type person with a big a club, and he's the lord of the forest and the lord of the animals. He calls the animals to him, and so he's very many things. And one of the things that he is, is that he also is often talked about as that sometimes he went crazy, and it's very hard to be a prophet. You know, and I know that the Celtic druids trained in prophecy. Uh-huh. That was one of the things they did. The druids and the bards were in the same category. And some of the training would be to send their spirit forth and to see the future. And so it drove him a little crazy, I guess. And, of course, there's many Merlin characters, and Taliesin, the great bard, is sort of a figure like Merlin. But Merlin had... you know, a part of him that was kind of crazy. And if you read the Arthurian legends, a lot of the knights went crazy. Lancelot went crazy and ended up wandering around in the woods for a while. But one of the things we don't realize about Merlin is that in some of the earlier stories, he has a twin sister who's also a prophetess. And her name was Gwyneth, as far as I can understand the Gaelic. And so this is a bit of a story about one day, Gwyneth always waited to ask her brother Merlin about her dreams. And I guess sometimes Merlin would go off and be in the woods and be a little crazy. And so Gwyneth would bring him food and drink. And one day when she had some dreams she needed him to interpret, she brought him some food and some drink. And then she begged him to listen to her. And so this is a story about some dreams that Merlin interpreted for his sister. I thought that was an important story to tell, especially since I love working with dreams.
Excellent. Go ahead.
Okay. So anyway, as I said, Gwyneth brought him food and drink. And then after this, she begged him to listen to her, relating to him certain dreams which she had seen at certain times, begging him to interpret them and to show her clearly what they represented. Upon which Merlin asked her to state them, and she spoke as followed. My true brother and friend, of a night in my sleep, I thought for certain within myself that I was standing on a great wide field, which I saw full of stone cairns, small in size, and a few big cairns among the small ones. And I could see great numbers of peoples gathering the stones from the small cairns and casting them into the big ones without a pause. And yet, in spite of this, I could not see either the small cairns becoming smaller, however much I could see the people gathering from them, or the big cairns becoming bigger, however great the people threw the stones at them. And with the marvel of this dream, I awoke. But I can't let them. I can't figure out what this is. Gwyneth, my dear sister, do not marvel too much at their vision, for no harm will come to thee from it. And be it known to thee that the field thou sawest represents this island, and the small cairns represent the husbandmen of the kingdom, and the laborers of each and every grade who live lawfully and win their livelihood by the labor of their bodies, and who place their trust in God alone. And the big cairns represent the chiefs of the kingdom of each and every grade. And the people who thou saw gathering the stones from the small cairns and casting them into the big ones, they represent the servants of noblemen who are and always will be ready to keep their servants, to take the wealth of the laborers and the husbandmen without ceasing forever. Sometimes under the pretense or semblance of offices of the law, or sometimes by force or by stealth. And inasmuch as you saw not the big cairns increasing, however much the load you saw the people carrying from the small cairns to the big ones, that shows God's wrath and displeasure. For God does not allow the wealth that is wrongfully amassed to multiply with the gatherers and their descendants. And inasmuch as you saw not the small cairns smaller, however much you saw the people taking away from them, that represents the grace of God, for it is certain that the noblemen of each and every grade oppress the common people for their worldly goods. And yet in spite of this, however much goods the noblemen and their peoples take from the husbandmen by oppression, the later will not be the worse or the poorer. For as much as they may lose the one way, God will send them twice as much another way, especially if they will take such oppression forbearingly with patience and restraint, and entrusting the punishment and vengeance to God in heaven, to whom it is meet and rightful to punish all iniquity. For he ordained the weak and the strong. And verily, however much an innocent man may lose in this world, God will not allow him to want any worldly thing in this world, and an abundance of all good in the world that will come. This is what your dream meant. And after this, she showed him the second dream. Merlin the wise and my true brother, this is my second dream. In my sleep, I thought I was standing in an alder grove of the straightest and fairest trees which the heart of man could think of or imagine. There I saw great hosts of men coming with axes in their hands, and with these they were cutting the alder grove and felling them all to the ground with their trunks. And forthwith I saw the straightest and fairest yew trees that man could imagine growing on the trunks of the alders. And with the marvel of this vision, I awoke from my sleep. And from that day to this, I cannot let it out of my memory. Gwyneth, said Merlin, my counsel to thee is that I marvel not at this dream, for no harm or hurt will come to thee from it. For the alder grove thou sawest represents this island and its ancestral people, which island will be greatly impoverished, especially of its noblemen, whom the alder trees represent. many or all of them will be destroyed, even as you saw all the alders destroyed. And yet, in spite of this, in the same way that you saw the yews growing forthwith on the trunks of the alders, so noblemen will again grow from the remnants of their lineage, at which time no wealth shall remain in the hands of the noblemen, who will betroth their children to men of lower rank, from whom they will grow mighty noblemen who will continue in that mode and state for a long time thereafter. And verily, this is what your dream represents. Well, after this, Gwyneth showed him the third dream. My true brother, I saw the third dream, for as I was sound asleep, I could see myself standing on a level, circular strand upon which I could see a great number of high green hills or mounds. And to my mind and thought, I could see the earth quaking so that the mounds subsided into level land. In place of these, to my mind and thought, there forthwith arose heaps of dung. And on these dunghills, I could see various kinds of flowering, scented herbs growing. There was a great marvel in my heart at the dream from that to this day. And Merlin interpreted this dream, saying, Fair Gwyneth, feel no worry in the matter, for the vision will do thee no harm. For the strand represents this island, and the mounds represent the chiefs of this island. And the quaking of the earth denotes that there will come war by which all the nobles will be destroyed, in the same way that you saw the mounds destroyed. And the heaps you saw arising in their place denote their dominions will be given to ignoble men. And the flowers denote from these curls that there will grow mighty noblemen. And yet it will be rare for the fifth descendant from the stock of these to possess the hearth of his father and grandfather and great-grandfather, for they will disappear like dung shoots. And this is the meaning of the dream. Well, after this, she declared to him that she saw a fourth dream, and she spoke in this way. Merlin, my brother, I thought at night in my sleep that I was standing in a park of the fairest wheat which a man could see with the sight of his eyes. And the ears of the wheat I could see dryly ripe and the stalks quite green. And I could see a mighty plague of swine coming and breaking down the hedge and coming into the park, where they caused grievous damage and destruction to the wheat, so that the corn was level with the ground. At which time I saw coming into the wheat field a troop of white greyhounds, which forthwith ran at the swine and killed them nearly all. Because of the sight, there was still a great marvel in my heart. And Merlin interpreted this fourth dream, saying, Fair Gwyneth, fear no worry in this matter, for the wheat field represents this kingdom, and the wheat represents the people. And the ripe ears and the sappy stalks denote the men young in age who will be white-headed at this time, which verily will be as rare a sight as seeing an ear of wheat quite ripe and the stalk quite green. And the swine you saw breaking into the wheat fields denotes that there will come to this kingdom a plague of foreigners who will destroy the people in the same way you saw the swine destroying the wheat. And the greyhounds denote that there will come men who will avenge the white-headed people upon the swine. Each of these will have been left their lives, the greyhound will drive to fight out of the kingdom. And this is your dream in full. And after this, she declared to him the fifth dream, saying, My brother, I saw the fifth dream. That is, I thought that I was standing in the middle of a graveyard of exceeding size, where I could see was full of maidens of young age. All these I could see pregnant and near the time of their delivery. And I thought to myself that the children are conversing with one another from their mother's wombs, which is a great marvel in my heart when I think of this vision. And then Merlin said, Let there be no worry upon thee because of the dream. This graveyard represents this island. And the maidens denote that there will come a world and a time when betrothals and marriage will be made between children. Aye, and verily, almost everyone of that age and generation will be married very young. And the children and offspring which will be gotten between them will be full of evil and cunning. And inasmuch as you were imagining that the children were speaking from their mother's wombs, that denotes that a 15-year-old youth of this age will be wiser in that age than a man of 60 years at this time. And thus ends the dreams. So that was a weird and interesting little story, I thought, and I thought I wanted to share that with everyone.
Yeah. You know, hearing these various dreams explained, I think, is always interesting. You know, dream interpretation is something that that all wizards are trained in. And I know in my training to understand the mysteries, I was long a student in interpretation of dreams. And in my own work, I have always sought to balance what good comes from science, what good comes from reason, and what good comes from the mysteries. And they each have something to teach us. And I count myself fortunate to have had good teachers in both arenas.
Definitely. And of course, with my training in dream interpretation, I think it's the best way to really begin to see your life from an objective point of view and to understand it. Now, I would not necessarily interpret those dreams like that, but then again, this is a chronicle, and I'm sure it was written way after the time when Merlin really did, you know, live. And so basically, it was a story about all the different invasions that came into Britain and all the different people and cultures that came and took over. Although I did like that first dream about how, I wasn't quite sure about that first dream, I should say, in terms of how the noblemen stole everything from the workers and the laborers. And I'm not quite sure I agree with Merlin that God will take care of it all. I think we have to also take care of it. It reminded me of our present day, as a matter of fact.
Uh-huh. Well, as well it should. I think that these are times that call upon us not just to be reasonable, but to be very much in tune, because reason and logic and science have an important part to play in helping us to understand the world. But there is far more. There's far more to this world than all the worlds that science can capture in its little tiny slide on its little tiny weights and measures scale. And many of us have drunk deep from the fountain of the irrational and of the mystic fountain. And
I don't like to call it irrational because that has such a negative connotation. What it is the feminine consciousness is very much about the creative imagination. And because it's so fluid and changing, as anyone who has done any psychedelic drugs can tell you, you know, it can make you crazy or it can bring you vision. And that's, you know, part of the issue right now is how do we have a strong enough sense of ourselves connected to the self, the greater soul and spirit, so that when we are flooded with visions, we don't get overwhelmed, but we can ground them and then figure out how to bring them into our lives.
One of the ancient aphorisms that I took great counsel from was a little quip or epigram that goes like this. I drank and danced all night with reason and found her a virgin in the morning.
That's a good one. I like that one.
Yeah. Well, I'm a double Virgo, Virgo with Virgo rising, as you know. And so I've schooled myself in rational thinking quite a bit. But thank goodness, I was led from the path of simple reason by many, many good teachers and gurus who've instructed me in the mysteries. And I think of Hermann Hesse, whose book Steppenwolf speaks to the, should we say, the barrenness of reason alone.
Yes.
But speaking of transitions, I've got a little piece here called The Transmigration of the Soul. Should I read it?
That would be great.
Okie dokie. This is a short piece, but an interesting one. Transmigration of the Soul. A certain woman had a kind of adventure. When she went out into the field to cut grass or to fetch hemp and place food in the stove, she returned to find that someone had taken the victuals from the stove and ate them clean up. She thought, what might such a thing as this signify? No how, no way could she guess it. She came back. The door had been shut. The only one remaining in the house was a baby, maybe half a year old, in the cradle. She betook herself to a wise woman and entreated her and paid her to come to investigate. And came she did. She looked about, snuffed about, the wise woman, and all at once she heard something indefinite. Go to! Go to! She said. Into the field. I'll hide myself and we'll see what this is. The woman went into the field and the wise woman hid herself in a corner. She kept a lookout. And then, all of a sudden, pop! The baby jumped from the cradle, and as the woman scrutinized the sight from the dark, she found he was no more a baby but an old man. In fact, he was quite dwarfish, with a long gray beard. And in a moment, he was after the eatables. He pulled the victuals from the stove, gave a loud screech, and began to gobble the food. When he devoured it all, he became a baby again, crawled back into the cradle. And then he began to screech. He screeched and screeched and screeched until the whole house rang. And the wise woman came after him. She placed him on a block of wood and began to chop the block under his feet. He screeched and screeched, and she chopped and chopped. He screeched and she chopped. Then she saw how, taking an opportunity, he again became an old man. He spoke to her and said, "Oh, old woman, I have transformed myself not only once, not only twice. At first I was a fish, then a bird, then an ant, then a quadruped, and now I am once more a human being. It isn't much better than being among the ants, but among the human beings, it isn't much worse." It reminded me of the stories how Merlin had become an animal and seen life through the eyes of an eagle, seen life through the eyes of a deer, seen life through the eyes of many different creatures as yes. part of his education.
Yes. Yes, and also Merlin was connected with Mabon, the divine child. So Merlin was often seen as a young child. So that's interesting. That's great.
So if people can
stand it, I have a bit of a poem.
Oh, please, please.
About Merlin. It's called The Riddles of Merlin by Alfred Noyes.
Sure, go ahead.
Okay, so this is the poem. As I was walking alone by the sea. "What is that whisper?" said Merlin to me. "Only," I answered, "the sigh of the wave." "Oh no," replied Merlin, "'tis the grass on your grave." As I lay dreaming in churchyard ground, "Listen," said Merlin, "what is that sound?" "The green grass is growing," I answered, but he chuckled, "Oh no, 'tis the sound of the sea." As I went homeward at dusk by the shore, "What is that crimson?" said Merlin once more. "Only the sun," I said, sinking to rest. "Sunset for east," he said, "sunrise for west." "Tell me, Merlin, it is I who call thee after a thousand springs. Tell me by what wizardry the white foam wakes in whiter wings. Where surf and seagulls toss and cry like sister flakes as they mount and fly, flakes that the great sea flings on high to kiss each other. and die. Tell me, Merlin, tell me why these delicate things that feast on flowers, Red Admiral, Brown Fir Tree, Sister the Flowers, yet sail the sky, frail ships that cut their cables, yet still fly the colors we know them by. Tell me, Merlin, tell me why the sea's chaotic color grows into these rainbow fish that Tyrian dye in scales of golden green reply to blue-striped mackerel waves, to kelp-brown caves, to deep-sea blooms of golden green and rose. Why colors that the sea at random throws were ordered into this living harmony, this little world no bigger than the hand, gliding over the raw tints whence it came, this opal-bellied patch of sand that floats above the sand or darts a flame through woods of crimson lake and flowers without a name. See all their tints around this body strewn in planetary order. Sun, moon, star are not more constant to their tune than those light scales of color are, where each repeats the glory of his neighbor in the same pattern with the same delight, as if without the artist's labor the palette of rich chaos and old night should spawn a myriad pictures, every line true to the lost designer's lost design. Tell me, Merlin, for what eye gathers and grows this cosmic harmony? Can seagulls feed or fishes brood on music fit for angels' food? Did Nyssence this delight create to lure the conger to his mate? If this be all that science tells, the narrowest church may peal its bells and Merlin work new miracles, while every dreamer, even as I, may wander on until he die.
Very nice.
The Riddles of Merlin.
Very nice indeed.
I think, once again, it brought up that theme about, you know, what is this wondrous world that we live in, the glory of it. And can we really understand it just with our rationality, or do we have to go with the flow and flow in and out of, you know, those shapes? You know, or is it sea foam, or is it seagull's wings? You know, I love Merlin because he's such a trickster. You know, does the sun rise? It's just the sunset. No, the sun rises in the west and sets in the east. You know, he puts it backwards. He says, the world is sometimes more than we think, as you were saying just a moment ago.
Indeed, indeed. Well, I have a bit of poetry to read, too. This poetry is themed off Egyptian mythology. It's from a book of poems called the Holy Books, and it's called The Heart Girt with a Serpent. I am the heart, and the snake is entwined about the invisible core of the mind. Rise, O my snake, it is now the hour of the hooded and holy ineffable flower. Rise, O my snake, into brilliance of bloom on the corpse of Osiris afloat in the tomb. O heart of my mother, my sister, mine own, thou art given to Nile, to the terror typhoon. Ah me, but the glory of ravening storm enswathes thee and wraps thee in frenzy of form. Be still, O my soul, that the spell may dissolve. As the wands are upraised and the aeons revolve, behold in my beauty how joyous thou art. O snake that caresses the crown of my heart, behold we are one, and the tempest of years goes down to the dusk. And the beetle appears. O beetle, the drone of thy dolorous note be ever the trance of this tremulous throat. I await the awakening, the summons on high from the Lord Adonai, from the Lord Adonai. Adonai spake into thee, saying, there must ever be division in the word, for the colors are many, but the light is one. Therefore, thou writest that which is of the mother of emerald and of lapis lazuli, and of turquoise and alexandrite. Another writes the words of topaz, and of deep amethyst, and of gray sapphire, and of deep sapphire as with a tinge of blood. Therefore do ye fret yourselves because of this. Be not contented with the image. I, who am the image of an image, say this. Debate not of the image, saying, beyond, beyond. One mounteth unto the crown by the moon and by the sun, by the arrow and by the foundation, by the dark home of the stars, a black earth. Not otherwise may ye reach into the smooth point. Nor is it fitting for the cobbler to prate to the royal matter. O cobbler, mend me this shoe that I may walk. O king, if I be thy son, let us speak of the embassy to the king, thy brother. Then there was silence. Speech had done with us a while. There is a light, so strenuous that it is not perceived as light. Wolfbane is not so sharp as steel, yet it pierceth the body more subtly. Even as evil kisses corrupt the blood, so do my words devour the spirit of man. I breathe, and there is infinite dis-ease in the spirit. As an acid eats into steel, as a cancer that utterly corrupts the body, so am I unto the spirit of man. I shall not rest until I have dissolved it all. So also the light that is absorbed. One absorbs a little and is called white and glistening. One absorbs all and is called black. Therefore, O my darling, thou art black. O my beautiful, I have likened thee to a jet Nubian boy, a boy of melancholy eye. O the filthy one, the dog, they cry against thee because thou art my beloved. Happy are they that praise thee, for they see thee with mine eyes. Not aloud shall they praise thee, but in the night watch. One shall steal close and grip thee with a secret grip. Another shall privily cast a crown of violets over thee. A third shall greatly dare and press mad lips to thine. Yes, yea, the night shall cover all. The night shall cover all. Thou wast long seeking me. Thou didst run forward so fast that I was unable to come up to thee. But thou darling fool, what bitterness thou didst crown thy days withal. Now I am with thee. I will never leave thy being, for I am the soft sinuous one entwined about thee, heart of gold. My head is jeweled with 12 stars. My body is white as the milk of the stars. It is bright with the blue of the abyss of stars invisible. I have found that which could not be found. I have found a vessel of quicksilver. Thou shalt instruct thy servant in this way. Thou shalt speak often with him. Amen, thou hast spoken it, Lord God. Therefore, Adonai spake unto thee, and said, let us take our delight in the multitude of men. Let us shape ourselves with a boat of mother of pearl from them, that we may ride upon the river of Amrit. Thou seest yon petal of amaranth, blown by the wind from the low sweet brows of Hathor. The magister saw it, and rejoiced in the beauty of it. Listen, from a certain world came an infinite wail, and the falling petal seemed to the little ones a wave to engulf their continent. So will they reproach thy servant, saying, who hath set thee to save us? We will be sore distressed. All they that understand not that thou and I are fashioning a boat of mother of pearl, we will sail down the river of Amrit, even to the ewe-groves of Yama, where we may rejoice exceedingly. And the joy of men shall be our silver gleam, and their woe our blue gleam, all in the mother of pearl. The scribe was wroth thereat. He spake, O Adonai, my master, I have borne the inkhorn and the pen without pay, in order that I might search the river of Amrit and sail thereon as one of ye. This I demand for my fee, that I partake of the echo of your kisses. And immediately it was granted unto him. Nay, but not therewith was he content. By an infinite abasement unto shame did he then strive and say, thou strivest ever. Even in thy yielding thou strivest to yield, and lo, thou yieldest not. Go thou into the uttermost place and subdue all things. Subdue thy fear and thy disgust and yield. There was a maiden that strayed among the corn and sighed, then grew a new birth, a narcissus, and therein she forgot her sighing and her loneliness. Even instantly rode Hades heavily upon her and ravished her away. Then the scribe knew the narcissus in his heart, but because it not came to his lips, therefore was he shamed and spake no more. Adonai spake yet again with V, and said, the earth is ripe for vintage. Let us eat of her grapes and be drunk thereon. The heart girt with a serpent.
Interesting, huh?
Yes, that kind of poetry one doesn't come across very often.
No. And it it's interesting because it began with Isis and Osiris, and Isis is definitely one of the goddesses that is honored during Virgo because she was a great magician too. Well, she brought her husband back to life enough to, you know, gather up his 14 parts.
Yep.
You know?
Yep. I have to tell you, Kat, it's been wonderful again, as always. I so enjoy our times together.
Yes. And so next week we will be back with more stories. Next week is fall equinox, and so we'll have some equinox stories. There's something about the light and the dark, most definitely.
Well, Kat, I understand that you're going to do some traveling.
Yes, I am.
You're going across the sea.
Across the sea, you got it. And so, but I won't be here for most of October, but I'm sure we'll find someone to come and help.
Well,
you
know,
out.
I've been speaking to some fine, fine mystic storytellers. The Lady Gwendolyn, another fine, fine storyteller, teller named Turbo Kitty, and another storyteller named Brother Osso. And I'm
great.
Sure some of those will join us during that time. Let me ask you a question, Kat. There is a theory among some mystics that when one travels across the globe, while it is an external journey, it also marks an internal journey.
Yes.
And tell me, foretell for me, would you, what wine you'll be drinking as you do this journey, both inward and outward?
Well, I will definitely be doing, I will definitely be drinking French wine and Italian wine and maybe a little Spanish wine while I'm at it.
Do you anticipate journeying to any sacred sites?
I'd like to go to Karnak, which is a site in... I just love that name. I've always wanted to go to Karnak. It's a site in Brittany.
Uh-huh.
And so I'm hoping to get there and to, to see what's up in Brittany.
Well, I just saw a news story to talk about the material world for just a second. I saw a news story that down in Nîmes, in the south of France, near Marseille, they just had a huge nuclear explosion. So I would be cautious if you find yourself heading toward the southern part of France.
Ooh, okay. That's exactly where I'm going to be. So we will see what happens.
Well, this is...
Oh, well, go into danger. I'm always one to go into danger. What the heck?
Well, you know, there's danger and there's danger. And I know the spirits are always with you, Kat. That's for sure.
That's it. They are. And so whatever will happen, will happen.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, I hope you tune in again as the good people here at the Bard's Grove, Kat and myself, Lantern, will be sharing with you more ancient tales from the past. And as the old saying goes, merry meet.
And merry part.
And
merry meet again.
Thank you so much, Kat.
Thank you, and good. And we'll see you next week at the Bard's Grove.
Okay. Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Okay.